to you, people. Starship Rokon Show with Anna Devlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Yes. Thank you to the listeners, I just want to say, who have direct messaged me and tagged me in posts to let me know that Tom Brady is a possible suspect in the threatening of Stormy Daniels back in 2011. That sketch eerily similar to the way he looked down to the hairstyle in 2011, the side-by-side pictures, yeah. The evidence has been presented. Thank you very much.
Yes. I have to say that I would like, if I could just respectfully ask that Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels step off the stage. Now, this is, you know, it's sort of like we're trying. It's like Kanye at the Grammys, these two. it's like they won't get out of the way. Hey, I should have won. I'll tell you, should have won.
And another thing.
Yeah. Who's Taylor Swift? I mean, it's like, get off the stage. Step aside. There are really important things here. And okay. We all get it. Donald Trump had sex with a porn star and he was barebacking.
Allegedly.
I get it. I don't care. I don't think anybody cares. I don't think it's an allegation anymore. He's not denying it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because he doesn't want to get sued for denying it. And then the rest of you. I mean, he knows it. Who cares? That's not the issue. There are bigger fish to fry here.
There are bigger fish right now. There are bigger issues in the world. But one other thing before we get to bigger issues, the ex-husband of Stormy Daniels also in a side-by-side picture looks very similar to the sketch that she called out. So if you look at those two, also pretty, just take a look.
This is the worst now, because now they're making everything seem like it's just a circus,
yes,
as opposed to a serious investigation, which, by the way, in our interview with James Comey coming up at 5:40 this afternoon, which we recorded about an hour ago, he does talk about that. So yeah, stay tuned
for that. Circus atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, this is a ridiculous thing.
It is.
And Avenatti is so, I mean, he's not likable in any way, shape, or form.
No, he's not.
And she is, you know, slightly more likable. If porn actresses can be likable, she's likable. But there's.
She seems like she's telling the truth in a lot of ways. But
yeah, I don't know about this part.
I don't know either.
I don't know about this part. I mean, maybe some guy came up to her and was creepy with her, you know, in 2011.
She's a porn star. I'm sure a lot of guys come up and be creepy with her.
I'm a big fan of your work.
Imagine
the close talking that goes on with porn stars. I mean, I just cannot imagine.
You got to pay for that.
Yeah. So that's the thing that is, you know, by the way, the sketch that they released on The View.
Mm-hmm. On the
today
view.
Was all right
because this is all part of a choreography of television.
Yes.
Not really about finding a suspect.
No, it was, first of all, the statute of limitations run out on this. So even if they found the guy, there's nothing they could do with him. Legally,
he's got great hair.
But
looking guy.
But that's the thing. He looks like another porn actress. Actor, right? He does. He looks like that was the guy I was in this movie with. It's the worst. I mean, at least if you're going to make something up like this or do whatever it is, at least make the guy look menacing.
Yeah,
not like a
villain.
Supermodel.
No, this looked like, yeah.
He looks like the guy that would step in to interrupt another creeper creeping on Stormy Daniels. Like, he looks like the savior of it all.
Like sort of the Ted Cruz one. You remember that?
I remember that. That was the time where Casey was with her stepfather. Father and her stepfather was all creeping up on her, and then her stepsister Mindy came in, and then they all started kissing.
Do they draw every sketch artist with the hoodie? Does the perpetrator always wear a hoodie?
Ever since the Unabomber, the hoodie has been very fashionable with sketch artists.
It's kind of like the white van of the crime scene. All the white vans that speed away and people describe that never existed.
Yeah.
And I feel like the artist signed her name quite clearly.
She did. She did.
Like Michelangelo. Lois.
Yeah. You know, this is the kind
Lois did that.
This is the kind of thing that if you're like, you know, at a resort, they'll come up to the pool and there'll be an artist who just does this. And goes, hey, would you like your painting done or would you like a sketch of you? Okay.
Or if you go outside the, Notre Dame in Paris, they'll do your picture for you and they sign it.
Same thing.
Francois.
Yeah, or a county fair. You get to sit down. I mean, that's and all of a sudden I'm like, this woman needs business. I thought she's the most famous sketch artist in humanity.
She actually is. She's the one, she's solved over 1,000 crimes. They give her credit for her just on the her ability to capture people in her sketches. But I didn't know they signed them that prominently. I thought that was weird.
I mean, come on. This is the most ridiculous thing ever.
She's the Michael Jordan of sketch artistry.
Yeah. Well,
she is.
Michael Avenatti, shut the blank up. You're ruining this. No one can take the I mean, think of the things that we have just learned in the last 48 hours that are really germane to everything else. And he would make the argument, well, if it weren't for him and all this, this case in New York wouldn't be going. That's probably not true. They've been looking at Michael Cohen for a while here. This goes way beyond him and your porn star client. Mm-hmm. Is lovely. I know you had a baby. Her whole story was she had a baby and she had to get back in shape real fast because you got to get back on the pole. Mama's going to get back on the pole. When you hear that, that's never good. When mommy has to get back on the pole and she's being threatened in the parking lot of her workout or morning workout with the baby on board with her right there. All right. That wasn't even a word, but you know what I meant. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Keep those winter coats and boots handy. I knew that would make you happy.
Ow!
Sorry, it's not over. And then there's this. Get to know Joe starting April 23rd. Joe Donlan joins Micah Mater on WGN-TV News at 5, 6, 9, and 10. That's starting April 23rd. Starting today, he'll be on with us, though. Playing News or Ruse, right? Or is that tomorrow?
No, that's today.
Today.
Joe Donlan today coming your way at 4 o'clock, coming up in just a few minutes, actually.
All righty.
And then James Comey, we sit down with him at 5:40 today. So.
Sorry, Ben.
Ben Bradley, Joe Donlan, James Comey. Which way is this show trending?
Things are going up in our world over here.
Thank you very much. All right, Ben Bradley's at the WGN-TV newsroom. I am right now taking you off the suspect list of the Stormy Daniels harasser.
Thank you very much.
Looks nothing like him, Ben Bradley.
No, I'm not that chiseled.
Yeah, it's strange.
Were you in 2011? I'm trying to remember now.
How was your hair? Did you have longer hair? Yeah, kind of more surfer looking at that time?
You know, 2011, we had toddlers. That was not a good year for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're more disheveled and sort of sleepless.
I looked tired.
Yes. The picture's pretty dreamy.
Yeah, the picture is, I mean, it is, I gotta say.
Violetta's like, can I get his number?
Well, right.
Well, remember the
I'm gonna try to find this guy for sure.
Remember the hot ex-felon whose picture started trending and now he's married to some billionaire socialite in England or something, but, and all the women who were like proposing to him in prison? I wonder if this guy could step forward. He'd have a lot of ladies after him.
And we always wonder who would do that. Well, we've just heard Violetta. I was like, oh, he's hot. Right. I love a man who looks good in a police sketch.
She's actually married. Violetta's actually married to a prisoner right now. And it's, part of it, it's an immigration issue. But she is, in fact. And so, I don't know. How's that going for you?
Does the marriage still count when they're away?
Well, here's when it counts, when they get out.
Yeah.
And they find out that it didn't count when you were when they were away. That's how that goes.
You can always upgrade.
I bring him a bologna sandwich once in a while. I got to meet a guy first. Yeah.
It was funny. I was actually at Stateville Prison a few weeks ago for a story, and they mentioned the Rokan show.
Oh, God.
And you know what other show they mentioned?
Huh.
As I'm walking out, a bunch of the guys were like, hey, tell Pat Tomasulo he ain't the man of the people. We're the man of the people.
Wow.
That's funny.
We and Tomasulo, that's quite a thing.
You're welcome for giving you that whole clientele, Ro.
And let's just say this was not the misdemeanor section of the prison. This was...
Yeah.
You should do a remote from the prison.
No, let me tell you. Don't give him any ideas. Let me tell you something. We have always... This show, for 30 years almost now, has been number one in prisons because I get more, I guess because maybe they just get AM radio, I don't know what it is, but I get more prison interaction in my mail than almost anything else.
A couple of years back, when I was at Channel 7, a guy I knew who worked over at the jail sent me a picture from a shakedown from inside the cell, and on the cell wall was our Channel 7 news team, like 8x10 glossy.
You just gotta wonder. Yeah. You gotta wonder who was the inspiration there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know who his favorite was. Yeah.
Well, you get some good tips from inside there, I bet, Ben, don't you? People reach out to you and they say, we watch you.
I do get a decent amount of prison mail, and I was amazed that when I moved from Channel 7 to GN, the inmates who regularly write me knew about the move.
Good, that
now
was
they
good
write
them.
Me over
oh,
at GN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can find your email.
It's good of them. All right.
Do they get tape in mail?
Do they get what?
I mean, tape in jail.
Tape, like which kind
like
of tape?
Scotch tape?
Yeah.
Recording tape?
Never mind.
But that's...
Are you going to let her talk?
No, I'm not. I'm going to turn off her... No, the Comey interview was taped about an hour ago.
Okay.
So it's in the can. It's there. They're right now sweetening me. as they like to say. All right, so what's coming up on the WGN TV news this afternoon and tonight?
Well, we're obviously keeping an eye on that Southwest Airlines emergency landing. One fatality now confirmed. WGN Investigates is looking into the case of a South Suburban cop we've just learned arrested, charged with threatening to kill his wife in a standoff in Chicago. We're going to have that story exclusively for you coming up on our news at 4 o'clock. Wow. We've learned also this may not be the first time that this officer has been looked at by his fellow members of law enforcement. Wow. So we'll have that for you coming up at 4 and 6 o'clock.
All right, so on the Southwest case.
Yes.
This is interesting because we weren't initially told that there was a fatality here. When they evacuated the plane, a lot of people called media and were witnessing, you know, giving us their impression of what occurred. And they thought it was a minor injury, but this did happen at altitude, a piece of the engine. The engine basically exploded, for lack of a better term. They have a technical term for it. But it's a piece of the shrapnel from that went through one of the passenger windows, and it partially sucked this victim out.
They said that some people tried to grab onto her to keep her in the plane. There were some witnesses who said that as well.
Just imagine what that was.
And you've
like.
Got the two issues there. You've got the shrapnel coming in at the plane, and then you've got the massive decompression that occurs when you have the cabin pierced at pressure.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Ben, you can. This is, I think, the first death on board, non-medical death on board a Southwest Airlines flight ever. There was one other death in Southwest Airlines history, and that was here at Midway.
In Midway, when that plane overshot the runway as it was landing, and a little boy was killed. He was actually riding in a car at the intersection at the northwest corner of Midway Airport. And the plane punctured right through the side fencing at Midway. And his family was driving in a minivan, just happened to be at that intersection, and that boy was killed. Yeah. But Southwest has had an incredible in-flight safety record.
Amazing in-flight safety record.
They move.
Incident, you know, given the nature of the tragedy here with one dead, it is still an amazing piece of the symphony of training and equipment here that saved everybody else on board, because, you know, there was a day in aviation where this couldn't possibly happen, but the 737-700's got incredibly tough airframe. It's got great technology on board, and these pilots handled it exactly right, saving all the rest
and
of the people.
And passengers were talking about, we thought we were going to die because of these sudden descent. That's what you do when you lose pressure, is you immediately begin to lower that the altitude of that airplane.
Right, they had to get down to 10,000 feet.
Right, it's an emergency descent.
Well, you had people Facebook Living saying that this may be the last time you see me, and I mean, it felt real to anybody on board.
I was just reading that guy's account, Anna. Isn't that interesting? He said, you know, I had Wi-Fi on the plane, and as, you know, you're thinking this may be the end, he thought, well, what is the fastest way to reach the most amount of my friends and loved ones? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw that on September 11th with people, you know, leaving messages.
I know.
He said, in this case today, he said, you know, I thought, well, I could send a text. And he thought, you know what? I'm going to get on Facebook Live.
And he thought, he said, I might be chronicling my final moments of my life. It really felt that way to him. And then he said that the flight attendants started to sort of cry and feel very emotional as soon as the landing had happened. Like, it was a very visible thing, but that the pilots were busy and they weren't talking to him as it went down, descended so rapidly.
I'm okay with that, right?
I am too. You understand why.
Yeah.
But, oh, boy.
Do have to be. And it's interesting because in the flight track, they went down to 10,000 feet, and then they had to get back up a little. They actually had to ascend a couple thousand feet because oxygen was already down, and people were able to breathe, you know, there's sort of room-pressured oxygen. And what happens in that, the reason they have to get to 10,000 feet is because once you're above that, the air is so thin, it's hard to, there's less oxygen. Anybody who's ever gone skiing or whatever, you know that you get higher up. Mm-hmm. But at 30,000 feet, you're not able to breathe. That's why those oxygen masks come down. And, it's so funny, you see that pre-flight briefing every time, right, where they give you that deal and no one ever pays attention to it. And I just wonder how many people were actually putting the mask on someone else before they were putting it on themselves.
It's not the way you're supposed to do
no,
it.
No, no.
Well, you look at those things, they have to cost like 39 cents. You know, it's like a plastic cup and a bag that doesn't inflate. And you think, is this really going to save me?
It does, though.
Boy, I would have used it then.
It does. Yeah.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, Ben, thank you very much. We'll see you tonight at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
See you then.
Thank you. All right. Right now, we'll check in with Judy Pilat. Well, let's wait 2 minutes. Ezra Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
All right. We have right now Congressman Adam Kinzinger joining us. Don't forget, James Comey joins us at 5:40 this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
His first day, the book came out today, and he'll be sharing his some of his story with us and his thoughts on the reaction that he's receiving from all the different from the different quarters here. He's the most hated man in America, is he really?
Right now, at the moment, potentially.
At least by the politicos that
right.
like to side up on things.
You see both sides lining up on the shows to take their shots at him. I saw John Podesta today, former chair of Hillary's campaign, just angry and saying that it might have cost the election. It was certainly one of the major factors, he said.
Yeah, they didn't have a particularly great candidate. I don't think, Congressman, excuse me for getting political here, but I don't think either side had a particularly great candidate. But somehow we had to muddle through this, and the side with the more dramatic, exciting, television friendly, the bigger character won this, and I you just kind of wonder, and we get into a little bit of this with Comey about where, you know, is this the way America's always going to be for the rest of time? What's your take on what has happened here?
You mean with the whole Comey?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, with Comey. Yeah.
Well, I was actually, to be honest with you, and mine's not because I'm a Politico. I was a little disappointed in it. I was actually pretty disappointed. I thought. You know, I watched the interview and I thought it was kind of, I don't know, salacious. I thought a lot of what he said was kind of an opinion, which I guess he has a right to have. I'm not saying he doesn't, but things like, you know, when you ask, is the president compromised? And he goes, I don't know. I have no evidence that he is, but I just don't know. I thought, you know, that's kind of a big thing to say. And also, like, I just think, you know, I actually had some, I had respect for Comey. I don't disrespect him. But I just thought that this is kind of the wrong time for him to do what he's doing. And it appears, at least in my view, that this is just done to sell books. And hey, he's probably being honest about what he thinks. But, you know, for me as a Republican, when he started out saying his entire family was rabidly pro-Hillary, and I'm just kind of like, huh, okay, well, that's interesting.
We addressed that, by the way, in the interview.
Everybody's mad at him. What's that?
We addressed that in the interview because we did the interview about an hour ago, 2 hours ago now.
Well, it's funny, too, because you don't see Comey, James Comey, as being a petty guy, and yet it's the petty stuff that sort of makes people talk and sells books. So when he makes those comments about his orange face and the white half moons under his eyes from tanning goggles, that's what people talk about, even though you would hope the former head of the FBI probably would normally not even include that particular detail.
Now, that's an FBI guy, though. That FBI guy, when he meets you, can tell you if you've got dandruff flakes.
Well, yeah, that's probably true.
They notice it.
Yeah,
I know.
But that's the sort of thing also publishers will tell you. You know, you have an editor that you're working with. Goes, hey, well, where are you in this? That's always what they say to you. Where's James Comey in this? What were you observing? You know, and
Bubby.
So they, and then that next thing you know, he's got to go do that. Well, it's interesting that you say all that because you do wonder, and I know that there are people out there who are critical of those who are not standing up to call out the bizarre nature of this and the change in how we actually communicate with each other and when a president stands up or when, you know, whatever it happens to be, when somebody does the sorts of things that Donald Trump does or that Michael Cohen does or now, you know, Sean Hannity does, where is the outrage from people who spent 8 years being outraged by anything that Barack Obama did, you know? And are we so far separated from each other in terms of that we can't actually, we can't agree on what's right and what's wrong?
Well, I think that's a really fair point. I've always said, you know, if you're going to criticize one side for something, you have to be willing to criticize your own. It's like, you know, the biblical verse, right? You notice a speck in somebody's eye when you got a plank in yours. And I've said, look, we've got to expect a lot of our leaders. They're not going to be perfect, and we're in a different time in politics where, you know, Twitter works and that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, I wish both sides, I guess what I worry about in the long term is that, you know, look, Republicans will lose power eventually, and then, you know, are Democrats going to be out for blood? And then when they lose power, are we going to be out for blood? Is there a point at which this cycle breaks, or does it just continue to get
angrier? And we've been doing this since the 80s. You know, it's interesting. It's fascinating to me, some of the people who have popped up here. Mm-hmm. Kimball Wood is in this. She was she was in the middle of a fight where Republicans were trying to trash her in 1993 when Bill Clinton wanted her to be the attorney general, and now all of a sudden here she is in the middle of this. I'm surprised that hasn't come up yet.
Well, she was a Clinton attorney general pick potential, and all kinds of background there.
Then you go back to John Bolton, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you go back to people are talking about Ken Bork, even though, you know, no longer a part of this, but the what happened in the 1970s with him and Nixon when he was Solicitor General and he was part of the Night of Long Knives, and will that happen again? I mean, you know, and so you almost kind of go back to Nixon. It's gotten exponentially worse with every administration, this taking of sides and not listening to each other. And it's a very scary thing. And again, I hate to shamelessly plug this, but I will. James Comey addresses this coming up at 5:40.
Did you interview James Comey?
I interviewed James Comey, and we're going to play it at 5:40.
James 2?
Yeah.
Who's coming up?
Let's talk about Korea here for a second. The president is at Mar-a-Lago with the Japanese prime minister. And they had a little press availability today in which one guy for a while spoke Japanese for about 90 seconds, 2 minutes. I thought the president was going to get up and walk out because it was like, you kind of had that look like, I don't know who this guy is. I'm leaving.
We speak American here.
but let it be known that the congressman said that. The one thing I think is interesting is he said the president did make some news here, which was the Korea talks. Might happen, might not happen. We'll just have to see what happens here. They seem to be walking back. I don't want to say walking back because that's an overused term, but they seem to be watering down whether or not this is actually going to occur.
Yeah, we're in kind of uncharted territory, and I'm of multiple, I kind of have both opinions on this. On the one hand, I look at this and say, you know, if we talk to Kim Jong-un, we're going to do like we've done in the past and just kind of feed his ego and allow him to buy time. But at the same time, I do look at it and go, look, if this fails, I mean, literally, I think the next step is war, because it's going to be that, or because I don't think we're going to allow North Korea to have a nuclear weapon. And I'm so eager. I don't think that's the worst thing ever. I think them having a nuclear weapon that they hold over our heads forever is the worst thing. But it is so bad that I think we need to do everything to avoid it. And if Donald Trump can have, even if it's not, you know, by May, but at some point have a meeting with Kim Jong-un, and frankly, if they can negotiate an end to the Korean War, which has been active since the beginning of the Korean War, mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, you know, Donald Trump could get the Nobel Peace Prize. It's that big of a deal, but, you know, so we'll see.
If he gets it, he deserves it. I don't say a lot of nice things here, but that's true. If he gets this done, he deserves it. But, you know, can he get it done? And if he does, I think that, you know, that goes a long way to solving a lot of ills. The economy is pumping along. His bizarre behavior does not help him. But and then all the other stuff, the people that he surrounded himself with, you know, dropping like flies, is not good for him. But people are willing to forgive a lot of those things. But if he gets a foreign policy victory like this, you know, there are a lot of chips on the table. And he said now he'd move it to June. The earliest it could occur is in June.
Yeah.
So we'll...
I think that's expected. When they initially put a timeline of May on it, I'm like, you know, look, there's got to be, in theory, there's got to be a lot of, like, pre-discussions before the principals meet. There's a lot of things that usually get hashed out before you put the two people in a room anyway.
And we do know, we've been told, at least, there's been reporting that is going on. Can you confirm that?
I don't know it besides what you've heard.
Okay.
So I don't have any specific information, but, you know, if it is, great. Again, I think this is... We're in such a situation now that if there's a chance we can solve this peacefully, that would be just fantastic for everybody.
Congressman, can I ask you about the Syria situation? Israel intelligence is being quoted in international news, really, but some national too today, saying that you know, if the U.S. really planned here to say just show that they are going to have a response to Syria and what happened there, then they did that. But if their objective was to cripple their chemical weapons capabilities, they did not do that. They're saying that the targeting was not what we all have maybe been led to believe or what we thought. I want to ask you if you agree with that and how you view what the action the U.S. military took.
I think the U.S. military took the right action. I frankly, you know, personally, and I don't say this to be critical, I would have made it a little more robust. I would have gone after some of his delivery mechanisms, too, you know, airplanes, helicopters. I think this did significant damage. We got briefed on this, on some of the battle damage assessment today, and I can't go into a lot of it, but I think it's significant. But I'm not sure this is kind of the death blow that would have, that really has sent the strongest message to the regime possible to never use them again. But like I said, you know, look, when you're dealing with the issue of chemical weapons outside of the issue of the broader Syrian civil war, which I don't think we have a plan for, which is unfortunate. But on the issue of chemical weapons, I think the status is basically it needs to cost you more to use them than any benefit you gain. And if that's the case, I think it was very successful.
Okay, let me on that point here very quickly. Russia, the Nikki Haley goes to the UN and says that there's, you know, more sanctions are coming. More punishment is coming for their complicity in all of this. Mm-hmm. And now the White House, that was on Sunday. By Tuesday, the White House is walking that back. Where are you on it?
Yeah, look, I think there needs to be more sanctions. I don't think Nikki Haley went in front of her skis. I think she's very, you know, she's very careful to say what she says. So there must have been a change of heart in the administration. And I hope that changes. But let me just say, action-wise, and I get the words are very different. I've been critical of the president's kind of lack of attacking Russia verbally. But, man, this has been a very hawkish anti-Russian administration. They just gave lethal weapons to Ukraine. We killed 200 Russian mercenaries in Syria. We just attacked Syria twice against Russian opposition. And it's actually been pretty – and, by the way, the election sanctions were put in place. All these sanctions have been put in place. So it's been a pretty
hawkish. Well, but it took over a year for that to happen.
Yeah, and but you know what? That's the thing. And there was criticism on that. But really, Treasury was trying to nail down some of the details of that. I think that it was slow, but – at the end of the day, putting sanctions isn't as easy as just saying there's sanctions. They had to nail down a lot of the details, and I think they got it right.
All right. I'm going to just take your word for it. I want to disagree with you, but I'm going to take your word for it. The other piece of this with Russia, though, that is interesting is that they're, and as you point out, Nikki Haley, who's, you know, one of the people that I think America trusts in all of this, is, you know, for her to, for the storyline to turn into, well, you know, she was countermanded. I think that makes everybody a little bit nervous here, but we'll just have to see what happens. And as you pointed out, 200 Russian mercenaries were killed as they were trying to attack U.S.-backed forces there and killed by U.S.-backed forces and maybe even some U.S. personnel. And the person who reported that in Russia was thrown off of his balcony.
Gee, I know.
Yeah, it's amazing. Isn't it?
I mean, and so anybody who wants to make this moral equivalence that you know, we do the same kind of killing that Russia does is off base, and that includes the president. So,
absolutely.
All right, Congressman, thank you. Appreciate it, sir.
Anytime. You bet.
All right, Congressman Adam Kinzinger. Right now, Violetta is going to stand by with the WGN traffic, but first, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan!
Thank you, Mr. Duffy! We're very pleased and proud to have with us as our celebrity for today's News or Ruse, and aren't we all?
Mm-hmm.
Joe Donlan, the new principal anchor, WGN-TV News in Chicago, and Joe starts on the air, I think, next week, right? Isn't that right, Joe?
That's right, Monday.
Monday!
Hey, Joe. Welcome to Chicago.
Thank you for having me on.
This is a big, this is just a ton of fun. Obviously, you know, going to WGN-TV, that is not for mere mortals, my friends. That's a big deal.
Trust me, I am humbled to have a seat at this table. I watched WGN growing up as a kid, and I've been in Portland, Oregon for the last 20 years, and to get the call to come back here was just beyond my wildest expectations.
How about that? And I've seen your social media posts. You're a Blackhawks fan from a kid. I saw a picture of you with Tony Esposito.
Right.
You've been to Wrigley already with your lovely wife. And
you break dance.
Do you break dance or are you a fan of break dancing? I saw that.
Both. Right. But typically that takes, as I said, a wedding or a going away party or at least a couple of cocktails.
Yeah, I was going to, you know, I'm glad you said it and I didn't have to pin you down on it.
Right.
Because that's alcohol fueled. Now, Joe, you and I are roughly close in age. I think I might be have a few on you right now.
Okay.
And I grew up in the breakdance age. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd like walk around in downtown Chicago, like on Rush Street back in the 80s, and there would be guys, you know, spinning on their heads on linoleum.
Uh-huh.
Were you one of those guys?
No,
were you spinning on your head
in
linoleum?
I don't have the spinning on the head move down.
I'm thinking you can do the helicopter.
I can do a little bit of that. The windmill, right? Mm-hmm. The coffee grinder, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know.
Do you have any of the outfits, Joe? Like, you know, the parachute pants and
right,
that stuff?
Right, yeah, the Adidas tracksuit. Uh-huh. That's pretty Adidas usually all suit. You need. And a wood floor and, or linoleum and just, yeah, get your spin on.
That's beautiful. We're going to have to see that at some point.
Oh, my God. Get your spin on. All right. Well, you know what? Let's talk about ratings here for just a second. You want to really catch a number on your first night. You tease that you're going to do that at like 10:25 and start at 9 o'clock. And believe me, you're going to win.
Idea.
You're going to win the 9 and the 10, my friend.
Right. I'm not sure the boss would go for that, but I may pitch it. I like that.
Yeah. Let's just wish everybody the best of luck. All right. Now, are you familiar with what we're going to do here?
Jeff told me a little bit about it, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you know
so
what?
You get the new anchor to talk about fake news. Is that the idea?
Sorry, not really fake news.
So you'll be able to vet out the real stuff, is the idea.
Let me just say this. So we've been playing this News or Ruse game on this radio program for the better part of a decade. Mm-hmm. So this is way before anybody ever called it fake news.
Okay.
We used just to call it...
You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Actually, so this is not really fake as much as it is just bizarre.
Okay.
And you'll hear a couple other contestants go before you, so you get an opportunity. All right, let's meet our folks here. We got Andrew playing with Judy.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Judy.
We got Kathy playing with Violetta.
Hey, girl.
Violetta.
And Kristen is playing with Joe. Kristen, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Now, Joe, one other thing I forgot to mention to you. Judy Pilak is our longstanding WGN radio news anchor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She has been playing this game with me for the last 3 years since I've gotten here. And I would just like to say one thing. She wins a lot. And we've talked, since we both have the same boss, Paul Rennie, over at WGN TV.
Sure.
He runs both TV and radio. He has told me that whoever wins this really does become the principal anchor. So one way or the other, either you come over to radio and Judy goes to TV or whichever way.
Okay.
So just letting you know.
No big deal.
No
pressure.
Not a lot riding on this, Joe.
And I'm just saying, you know what, Joe? I have a face for TV.
Yeah.
You might have a face for radio.
Let the smack talk begin.
Let's do this. I guess the good news is I haven't even started yet, so no one would miss me.
Yeah. All right. $50 gift certificate to Stefani Restaurants. Get any of their award-winning restaurants, except their Tavern on Rush and Airport locations. Check out their newest location, Stefani Prime in Lincolnwood. Check out StefaniRestaurants.com. That's what the winner gets. Plus a $50 Builder Supply Outlet card. True outlet prices every day. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview and also in Orland Park. And the runners-up get the $50 Stefani gift card as well. All right. Here we go. Here's your first headline.
Let's
Andrew
do
and
it.
Judy. Drunk tourist accidentally climbs mountain while trying to get back to his hotel.
Sounds like news to me, Judy.
I mean, I may have done that once or twice. It does sound like news.
Yeah, I do. I think that's totally news.
Nicely done. Right out of the gates. All right, Kathy Violetta, here's your headline. MySpace page, Deport Zuckerberg becomes fastest growing online community of 2018.
I want to say it's fake, Violetta. I want to say it's fake.
All right, let's go with you. Fake.
Yep.
Way to sniff it out.
And MySpace was the clue there. That was fake.
How'd you guess?
Yeah. All right, here we go, Joe. Buckle in. Here we go, Joe and Kristen. Canadian Hell's Angels target businesses by posting one-star reviews.
What do you think, Kristen?
I think that's ruse because they should have better things to do with their time.
I'll go with you. I think that's a ruse, too.
Think about that being real.
Oh, this is getting too close for my own comfort. Uh-oh. I got to pull Judy out of this thing.
Judy, you had a good run here. Good luck on TV.
Got some ways to go here.
All right.
Here we go.
Round two, Andrew and Judy.
Okay, here's the headline, guys. Canadian Supreme Court rules flatulence is not workplace bullying.
Ew.
Yeah, it is.
Last two have been Canadian.
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I feel like that's a ruse. What do you think?
I do, too. When you're talking flatulence, I'm guessing a ruse.
Yeah.
Not in Canada.
That was workplace bullying, according to the manager in this flatulence issue.
All right, here we go. Kathy and Violetta. Michigan troopers ask locals not to bubble wrap that bridge that trucks keep hitting.
Violetta, we got to step it up here. I would say news.
Yeah, let's go news, because, why not?
Bubble wrap. It's fun.
on.
Yay. Oh, my God, Joe. Violetta might be the anchor over Channel 9. Now we're really in trouble.
Is it two?
Yeah. All right. You got to get this one right.
Joe and Kristen, NASA has a plan to put robot bees on Mars.
I got the last one wrong, so.
Are you deferring to me on this?
Yeah, maybe. What do you
I'm going to say news on that one.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Oh, the save!
You got it.
The save from the news veteran.
Nicely done.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. That was so close. All right, I'm so glad. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back. And Joe Donlan, who is your new anchor, your new 9 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. I said,
I may be noon if I lose this game.
I meant new, but is it 5 o'clock? What time are you?
Five, six, nine, and ten.
Oh my
That's
God.
What Sapelsa told me anyway. He
oh,
left.
Gee.
He left a banana peel and a half a Twinkie in his desk drawer. That's, and a note that said, "Good luck, I'm gone."
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I remember the day that he announced his retirement. It was like, Mark,
yeah.
Mark,
yeah, like Mark.
Yeah, it was like that. All right, Joe, hold on 1 second. We'll come right back. And the lightning round, the Orion Samuelson round coming your way. Broadcast legend Orion Samuelson reads the headlines, and then everybody has to decide what's news and what's ruse. But first, Judy tells us what's really happening in the WGN newsroom at the bottom of the hour.
And then there's this. Whoa, what's happening to the show? I lost my piece of paper as well. Hold on. I got it.
It's a wind gust in there.
Get to know Joe starting April 23rd. Joe Donlan joins Michael Matera on WGN TV News. Yeah, how about that? 5, 6, 9, and 10. That's starting April 23rd. And we're getting to know Joe right now.
Because he's playing News or Ruse with us. And Joe, thank you for doing that. I know you're very busy right now getting ready for your debut on Monday. But you've taken some time out. Anybody giving you trouble at the newsroom yet? Like that Ben Bradley?
Yeah, Ben.
No, he's
watch
actually,
out.
He was the first one to call when I got the job, which was really great to hear from him. And Mike was right behind him. And everyone has been sending me text from WGN welcoming me. It's just an amazing place. Like I said, I grew up watching this station, and to be here is almost surreal. It's incredible. There, you know, I was very comfortable in Portland. I wasn't even looking for this, really. I didn't have an agent, and I just happened to call Sapelsa and say, hey, congratulations on your retirement. And he called the next day and said, I don't know if you're interested, but they're still looking. So I sent some things out. The next thing I knew, I was out here for an audition, and 2 months later,
cool.
Got it.
Wow. How great is that?
Good for you.
It is a good crew over there. Good
and,
people.
And you'll love Chicago's a very great town. I think a lot of people around the country, when they think about Chicago, they immediately think about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's snowing in late April, let me tell you something. It's not normally like this.
Right.
And, you came at the right time, though, right. Joe, because, yeah, pretty and, soon here.
Well, people have already stopped me at Wrigley. It was just amazing to see, you know, hey, there's the new guy at WGN. Another guy stopped me and said, hey, Joe, welcome to Chicago. I mean, I haven't been even on the air yet, and people are stopping me. So the ad campaign shows really the reach of this station. I'm getting to know Dean Richards right now. I'm sitting at his desk. Is it me, or does he look exactly like Billy Joel?
Oh, I've heard that before. Yes, there's a resemblance,
yeah.
For sure.
I wish I had his voice, or Larry Potash's voice, too. How about that?
Yeah, there's that. There is that. And that's why I hate all of those people. They're very talented. All right, Joe, let's get back to News or Ruse here. And again, remember, your job is on the line here. That's the one thing for you. Everybody else are playing for $50 Stefani restaurant gift cards or Builder Supply outlet cards. You are playing for your career. All right, here we go. Andrew and Judy, here is your headline as read to you by broadcasting Hall of Famer Orion Samuelson.
Construction worker arrested after trying to sell ancient love tools to rightful owners.
What? Andrew and Judy. Construction worker arrested after trying to sell ancient love tools to rightful owner.
What are love tools?
What are ancient love tools? That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, don't worry. I could explain it to you kids, but I would have to do it over a drink or two. All right, yes?
I think that's news.
All right, let's go news.
Oh! Joe's safe right now. You might actually keep your job. Although, I don't think Violetta was part of the deal. I don't think Paul Rennie was that crazy to think that she should be the anchor. So it might be all right. All right, Kathy and Violetta here. Actually, let's go with Kristen and Joe first, because you got to get this right to stay in it. Otherwise, okay. Violetta wins this just going away, which you should not let happen. All right, here you go. Here's your headline.
Mike Pence once ratted out his fraternity brothers for having a keg.
Oh, my
Wait,
God.
What? You're what?
Mike Pence once ratted out his fraternity brothers for having a keg.
I'll say true.
I'll go with you on that.
That is not only true, that is absolutely necessity, right? That story had to be true.
It totally did. There's nothing about that that could be made up.
He was wearing a blue suit and a red tie when he did it, too. You could tell, and he had that look on his face like something smells really kind of funny in the room. He doesn't really want to acknowledge it.
Okay. I feel like we should have known that before we voted.
Yeah, that's excellent point. That's exactly what James Comey told me, which, by the way, that interview is coming up at 5:40. Sit down
yes,
with James
it
Comey.
It is. There Looking forward to that.
All right. And finally, let's see here. Kathy and Violetta, here's your opportunity to win this thing. Are you ready?
Born yes, ready.
Violetta, go to the head of the class.
All right, here we go.
China launches world's first all-electric cargo ship. We'll use it to haul coal.
I don't even know what's funny about that headline.
You know, all electric?
Yeah. Okay, don't worry. That's not explain it to her. She doesn't get
I'm
it by
kidding.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you
would say ruse.
You want to say ruse?
Wait, wait.
I would say
wait.
Ruse. Well, so, what would you say?
Wait, hold on 1 second. Joe, don't jump in here. No. You're already the rules of the game are set. You have two right. They have two right. They got to get this one to win. If not, we go to the lightning round.
Joe, I can call you in as a celebrity help if you like.
Yeah, but he's playing against you here.
Well, if he doesn't understand that.
No, I want the opportunity to perhaps pick a different answer than them to win the game.
No, you've already, this is it. No, it doesn't work like that. I know you're trying to get out of here, you know, but it doesn't work like that.
The only crazy thing here is that I'm not in the game anymore.
I right. know. Yeah, totally eliminated.
All right, I need an answer here.
Yeah, God.
China launches world's first all-electric cargo ship. We'll use it to haul coal.
I would say ruse.
Yeah, let's go ruse.
Oh,
the lightning round is! All right, here we go.
Joe and Kristen, stay in it.
Here is your headline. Zoo offering visitors buckets of Detroit zoo poop.
Who's that for?
Wait, who's this for?
Kristen and Joe.
Okay,
zoo offering visitors buckets of Detroit zoo poop.
What do you think, Kristen?
For why? I say that's false.
Joe, you can talk her in or out of it. It's up to you.
Yeah. You know what? You do this one. This one's on you.
This one's on me?
This one's on you.
I'm going to go news on that.
You got it.
Oh, maybe.
Way to overrule.
The from behind. All right, Kathy and Violetta, here's your headline.
I would have gone yes on the coal for the Chinese ships. We should have won this game a round ago.
No, it doesn't work like that.
You know what? Joe's already got the Chicago way down. I got it. You got it.
You could have paid somebody off, and then you would have gotten that. All right, we got Kathy Violetta. New Jersey police officers suspended after storming Domino's over undelivered pizza.
This sounds too stupid to be false. I would say news.
News.
I would say news.
Oh, it continues. Wow. All right, back to Kristen and Joe. Man has world's worst super gonorrhea.
I don't think so. That's what I'm going to say.
You're going no on that?
Yeah, that's
just like that's the most totally plausible headline we've had so far.
Leave it up to a news anchor on this one. You know, I'm just going to tell you, he's been around show business for a long time.
Seen it all.
Yeah.
Gosh. Mm-hmm.
Man has world's worst super gonorrhea.
I'm leaning toward news on that one, Kristen.
I didn't answer.
Really? But what's world's worst super gonorrhea? Like, what classifies the worst? I don't know.
I just think you guys are all
I just need an answer here. Yes or no?
Okay. Well, I'll go news. You said news.
Nicely done, guys. Nicely done.
If you want to know about gonorrhea, ask a news anchor. All right.
Here we go. Kathy Violetta, here's the headline. Florida woman mistakes labor for bad Chinese food.
I feel like
number one, Florida.
Yeah.
I would say news.
I was going to say ruse.
I didn't answer.
Easy, but we'll go with you.
Oh, you didn't give her a chance to talk her out of it.
All right, Kristen and Joe, here you go. Hamburglar sentenced to jail after breaking into Maryland's McDonald's.
What do you think, Kristen?
Let's go news.
I'm with you.
Got it. Kristen and Violetta, dog food featuring Vladimir Putin's image banned in China after testing positive for dog DNA.
That's just crazy.
Kathy and Violetta.
Could you repeat the first part of that?
Dog food featuring Vladimir Putin's image banned in China after testing positive for dog DNA.
Putin, I would say news.
Okay. Wait, what are you doing? I didn't answer. Violetta, get a hold of your contestant here. Let's go.
Okay, come on, Kathy. What do you think?
Okay. All right, Ruth.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Man,
that was like the longest game ever.
I know. Trust me, your sentiment is felt right here. Canadian man sues 10-year-old girl after jogging into her bike. Kristen and Joe.
What do you think, Kristen?
I don't know if you could sue a 10-year-old, so I would say ruse.
I'll go ruse, too, on that.
Oh, for the steal. Here we go.
Here it is. German police officer helps clueless boyfriend end relationship.
Yes.
Kathy and Violetta.
I would say news.
News. You got it.
Wow. Violetta is now the new principal anchor at WGN-TV News. Congratulations to everybody except for Chicago. And Joe Donlin, we will see you actually for real on Monday at 5, 6, 9, and 10 on the WGN-TV News. Congratulations on this, and have fun.
Congratulations. I appreciate it. Cubs tonight, Cards. Can't wait.
Oh, that's right. Just don't say what I think you were just about to say. And you're good to go.
What's that?
Although Sapelsa, you know, I want to tell you something. Sapelsa was the only publicly acknowledging Green Bay Packer fan and media in Chicago.
Very proud.
No, I root for the Cubs, even though I'm from St. Louis. I definitely rooted for them last year and certainly the year before when they won it all. So I'm all in local here.
Okay, all right. There you go. That is the proper answer. See, that is the proper answer. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Joe. There he goes. Joe Donlin, the new anchor at Channel 9. Right now, Judy is still going to be the current anchor of WGN Radio in the afternoons right here.
What does it take to get off of this board?
Being brought to you by AppleChevy.com. Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis. In 1 hour, you're going to be listening, if you stay tuned here, to the interview with James Comey that we did earlier today.
No big deal.
Yeah. On the day that it all comes out.
Yeah. It's quite a time to get him. I know he's doing a lot of national media today.
And it was interesting. We recorded a couple hours ago, and it's fascinating. I do ask him about the Sean Hannity revelation of yesterday.
Well, he must have known it.
And Hannity made us, you know, he's a radio guy by heart. He made us sit around for the entire hour before he said nothing.
He even addressed all the members of the media who are watching just for that information right at the top.
Yeah.
Did you ask Comey if he wanted to play News or Ruse?
I did actually ask him. He said he was busy.
A little busy.
I don't know what that's all about.
That's not right.
Did he say, been there, done that?
Yeah, right.
Donald Trump.
News or Ruse.
Donald Trump elected 45th president of the United States. News or Ruse.
You could really just come up with headlines from the last year that may or may not have involved Comey, and he wouldn't be a difficult game to play.
I'm kind of thinking about doing it because there are some lesser headlines that make it that are coming out of Washington that I'm thinking we should do an all Washington edition of these lesser headlines because some of them you wouldn't believe.
No, it's true.
But there's the bigger stuff is just, you know, it's kind of in our sort of in our way here, if you will.
Right. Sometimes I'll read a headline and I'll think, is that an onion headline or a real headline? And it's stuff going on in Washington. And then it just sort of passes.
You mean like coal executive to head EPA? Right. I mean, things like that.
Things like that.
Exactly. Yeah, those are the sorts of things that do tend to give a little bit of
pause.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pause. That's a nice way to look at it. All right. Did you see that Starbucks is announcing that they are going to be closing 8,000 stores in the United States at the end of May for a day while they retrain all of their employees?
Yeah.
after what happened with the where the police arrested. To me, this story is a little odd because why are the police arresting them? What goes on?
Well, they called 911. The store manager called 911 to ask for the police to remove the people who were trespassing on the property.
I blame the Philadelphia police for this, for not like figuring out what was going on there.
Well, you think they would have given him an opportunity to just say, hey, gentlemen, let's move on. Let's get out of the store.
Let's have a conversation outside.
Or let's just, hey, guys, they don't want you to store. Not that alone is right, but that would have been a much easier way to do it than publicly handcuffing and marching them out. They were never charged with trespassing, but they were handcuffed.
How about the cops going to the manager going, hey, what are you calling with this for? Let us know when you get wrapped. I mean, in Chicago, I just cannot imagine in Chicago with all the stuff that goes on here, and things go on in Philadelphia too. It's not an easy town. I mean, not every cop does the right thing all the time, right? But let's just put that aside for a moment. There were like seven cops in that video that had shown up. You had what appeared to be a command type of some sort, a sergeant or something that was standing there. Mm-hmm. Too, and they're all standing around with their hands in their pockets and looking around. I don't know, what are we gonna do? What do you want? What are you gonna do? I mean, it was like and these guys are like, what did we do, right? And they're like, well, and the manager says you're sitting here, and you gotta go. And then in a moment, this is the part that's a little unclear to me. If they stop saying, hey, we're not going anywhere, we're waiting on our friend, who, by the way, the friend showed up and was in line to buy coffee.
Oh, gee.
Hey, did you guys want something?
Right.
I'll pay on my app.
I mean, and that was the thing. It was like, well, you're not paying anything. And I get that they don't want like vagrants sitting around in there. Taking up chairs. They want people to move around and people who haven't showered in 6 weeks to scare people. That was not the case here.
No, it wasn't. And it's totally up to a business to, ask people, I suppose, to leave if they're just hanging out in the store. I guess you're allowed to do that, of course. It just seems as if all of us could put ourselves in that situation. And I know that if that were me standing there or you, Ro, would this have happened?
No. Yeah, undoubtedly not.
No, undoubtedly not.
Right. And I get that. But why do they have to close the stores for a day? 8,000 stores for a day. And I think you can handle this. This is the way that we do in corporate America. You get a video that you have to open up in your email, uh-huh. and you have to sit there for 30 minutes while B-list actors tell you exactly how you should be behaving.
Well, sometimes it's John Cleese, and then it's sort of fun. But yeah.
It's going to be tough for you to meet your $2,000 yearly budget for Starbucks with the stores closing for a day.
What are you going to do?
I know. It's gonna
what about
you
if you
have
use
to double
your
up the following day?
It's going to throw me off.
Right.
I mean, this is like one of those things where we and I think it gets caught up in the media machine and it becomes illogical because this is, I mean, the woman who did this, who took the video, she wanted to make a statement. She wanted to stand up for something. And it is true that there are, she was on TV last night and mm-hmm. she was like, I am so privileged. This never happens to me.
But others in the store were even saying, what are you doing? Whoa. I mean, I think a lot of people who had witnessed almost the entire situation had a reaction like that, like this is a little crazy. You heard them on the video.
Does this happen all the time at every Starbucks? Why do they have to close 8,000 Starbucks down for this? How about they just pull this manager out and go, hey, what are you, a moron? Hey, pay a little, we're firing you, pay a little attention.
Starbucks,
don't you think Starbucks is taking a stand here?
Yeah, they are.
Just like those people, I think, took a stand.
They're
not
ruining
leaving.
My day on what's the day
okay,
here that's coming
aren't there
up here
more than 8,000 Starbucks.
No.
I thought they were just the company-owned ones. Not, I mean, aren't there some that are...
You don't want to go to those. No, you don't. Like the ones that are in hotels and other places that is, like airports, you don't want to go.
Those, you know what, buddy? You might have to go to one.
I'm going to go to O'Hare and I'm going to get a Starbucks at O'Hare? I don't think so.
I think there's one in the hotel right down the street here.
And I don't think it's...
Well, it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
It is. It's the same.
No, it is not.
You should lead the protest tomorrow for the people who are upset that you can't get your latte.
Yeah, that'll go over really big. Why don't you do that? See how that works out for you.
I just won't ask for a blonde roast. Then that way I think I'm okay.
I can't get my skinny no foam latte. What's going on?
Okay.
I thought some people are saying Starbucks is reacting the way you should in this way, just to ensure that, look, this is not who we are. They're a brand that attaches itself to a social conscience, and they say that this isn't who we are, and so let's make sure our employees stand up and do what's right, and let's even if the training part of it is a little weird, or but at least it identifies what their values are as a company,
and it benefits them more as a whole.
Yeah.
By doing this,
that's true.
Yeah,
Kevin,
lose a few bucks, but by not doing this, imagine the response to that.
Yeah, I'm over it already. I'm glad that the manager got fired. It was a dopey thing to do. I don't know why the Philadelphia police went along with it. I really don't. I mean, there's a little bit of mediation that goes on when cops arrive on a scene, especially in a business like that in a downtown area. Right? Like, you know, there's a high traffic area where this happened.
Like, let's work on this.
Yeah. They kind of work it out.
It seemed like a multiplication of dumb happening. It was person. Why is everyone trying to out-dumb the other person here?
It was like the domino dumb effect, right? Yeah. It's just one thing after another.
Really, even more surprising is that people stood up inside the coffee place. I mean, they just didn't look the other way, and still it happened. Mm-hmm. It just kept going and going and snowballing.
Well, then all of a sudden, this is how goofy we are now. Where is the logic in all of this? Everybody had to take sides immediately. So you have these people who are jumping up and they got to take sides. And they're going, we got to stand up for justice. Now I'm trying to get my Americano in a venti cup. That's a grande Americano in a venti cup. That's all I want. Could we take this to Fox News? I gotta sit down.
That's a veteran move, by the way. Grande in the venti.
Oh yeah, it's good because it doesn't splash around as much. Yeah. And they don't charge extra for that.
It's a nice little treat they give you.
I just want to be. I mean, you know, when you look
they
at these guys,
you $4 for it. Okay. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. My grandmother is like in a super spin cycle in her grave right now, knowing that I paid more than a quarter for a cup of coffee. But the reality is that when the cops walked in here, if they can't look at the guys who are sitting there and go, mm-hmm. you know, these are like well-dressed guys sitting on their phones, right, who look like they just stepped out of a GQ magazine.
One of them's a college finance grad, and his fraternity brothers are now helping raise money for the cause. And he's a business finance major from out of Bloomsburg University.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I don't know. It seems like there was some...
A lot of overreactions.
There was some dum-dum-dum. To Kevin's point, it was a triple down of dumbness.
The manager who has since departed the company said that she understood it, that her corporate policy was they had wide latitude if it felt as if people were... There was excessive loitering going on in the store, and that she viewed that to be a case of that.
There's all kinds of people who go into Starbucks all day long with their laptops and just use their Wi-Fi.
When you walk into a Starbucks, like, who are these people? They don't have offices. They don't have homes. They're just there with their MacBook.
Exactly. They're taking a meeting at the Starbucks, and maybe they get some, maybe they don't. Sometimes they bring in, you know, Panera Bakery coffee. All right, Dave is a Chicago cop. Dave, what do you think about this?
Yeah, one of the main things when we get calls like this that we say is, I'm not paid to be your bouncer. You know, you know, unless there's some sort of really legitimate illegal act alleged, then I can't imagine a police officer in Chicago arresting these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I can't either. I mean, it's ridiculous.
There are times when people do the wrong things, but like you said, there's seven guys there. Somebody would have gone, well, what are we arresting them for? Loitering isn't really it.
Right. Right, and there's got to be...
Loitering in a public place in the middle of a day is not really a normal thing to arrest somebody for.
Yeah, I mean, in a store where people do go in, and, you know...
And
they
loiter.
They can argue, well, we're thinking about it, we're going to order in just a few minutes, we're waiting on our buddy.
Yeah.
And, you know, how long were they there for? You know, were they there for 6 hours? I mean, that's one thing. But I think according to the reports, that they were there, you know, for around half an hour. And, you know, so their buddy's late. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. I mean,
when I first heard this story, I thought that there was something that wasn't on the video that the manager would say that said, well, before this person got there, they were MFing me or whatever.
Right.
But when she made the statement that, well, it's company policy that if you don't buy something, you're going to get arrested. I don't think that's really that company policy.
You know, that's United's company policy. That's not that's not Starbucks company policy. So, you know, I know how that goes.
That's true.
All right. Appreciate your service, sir. Thank you.
I thought there was something more to it, too. And you kept looking for it and looking for it. And it never came up.
Why can't we just have some common sense around here, people?
Those officers might have not arrested someone, but they definitely would have grabbed a coffee.
All right. Well, yeah, we're gonna toss them out. But you know what I need? I need the Rokan special. That's an Americano. It's a grande size, an Aventi cup. Just a little room. No water, no extra water or nothing. Just that's all I need.
And don't charge me any extra for that extra cup, the extra large cup.
What do you mean you're charging me extra for it? I'm going to leave these loiterers here. All right. Let's we'll come back. But first, here is Judy going to tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
I like how the IRS site failed the payment part where you submit your payment on tax day, but you still have to pay your taxes today.
I tried to do it, and then I said I couldn't do it today, and that's just too bad. I'm not going to pay this year.
You might need to put a check in the mail.
You might need to do that.
And put a stamp on it if you have one.
I think that, so I sent, now again, my accountant is behind bars, so it's a little hard to tell if he gets internet time at the library. I don't know how that works in jail, but you know, I had he loves when I make that joke, by the way, just loves it. But I sent like a thing to them, to my accountants, and said, you know, here's the deal. Now, did I give them the ability to file electronically on my behalf. That's part of the deal.
Yeah.
That's why I pay them $15,000 an hour or whatever they charge me.
Seems like a lot, but yeah.
But I don't know. What if they couldn't get in? Do I get to blame my accountants?
Well, I don't think that's the same.
Or am I going to jail?
It's the people who go online to the IRS.gov website and try to submit a payment.
Right. Well,
that
no,
way.
Your tax attorney would do that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how
they
would work.
Do that?
Yeah.
Instead of
e-file? It's the same system.
And
well, that's an e-file.
Yeah. It's my understanding it's always your fault in the end.
Oh, no.
The taxpayer.
Not when I get Michael Cohen as my new attorney. Because he represents radio guys, I've decided I'm going to use him.
First, you're going to have to prove that he's an attorney.
He's an attorney. I asked him a couple questions.
He's a fixer.
He knows about real estate. I asked him about real estate.
Yeah.
And his fourth client is
asking about his tax return.
Wait. I didn't know he represented Rokan.
Who knew that? All right. You know what it's time for, don't you?
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Did I mention that our sit-down with James Comey is coming up at 5:40?
Several times, but I think it's worth mentioning again. That's pretty cool.
All right. Here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Well, former Director Comey's nemesis Donald Trump is in the news today. There's a shocker. The president was at Mar-a-Lago today to meet with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. I was kind of an interesting thing that he was like, he explained that he bought Mar-a-Lago from the government. That is not how I remember that going down.
No.
But he said that the years ago that Jimmy Carter decided he didn't want to, it was a federally owned piece of property. They didn't want to keep it up. And so that Trump was able to buy it. I'd like to double check that as I would like to double check everything he says. Cause I thought he bought it from another guy down there who had already bought it.
That's interesting. I did not know
so
that background.
But anyway, so he's in Mar-a-Lago because the foreign leaders like to meet him there. That's what he said.
Well, why not?
Yeah. As opposed to the White House. They'd rather come down to the Southern White House. We call it the Southern White House now. And that's what it was. It was the Southern White House before. So now it's the Southern White House again. I did not know that history. I thought the Southern White House was actually down in Key West when the Truman Annex, as it's known now. They used to call that the Southern White House. Because Truman couldn't afford a separate property because he was just a working guy, and
like Donald Trump,
they gave him a piece of property on the Key West Naval Base. So
here's the background: Mar-a-Lago's first owner, Marjorie Meriwether Post,
left
the estate to the federal government, hoping it would become a vacation home for presidents, but the government was not interested in that use. So Trump later bought it.
There you go. I'll take it.
And then I'll become president.
Because one day I'll be president, and I'll get even with all of you. Oh, no, he won't. Anyway, here he is with Shinzo Abe. And he says that, hey, he will be meeting very soon with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, or maybe he won't be.
That'll be taking place probably in early June or a little before that, assuming things go well. It's possible things won't go well and we won't have the meetings, and we'll just continue to go along this very strong path that we've taken. Without us and without me in particular, I guess, you would have to say that they wouldn't be discussing anything, including the Olympics would have been a failure. Instead, it was a great success. They would have had a real problem.
I do like how he shares the credit with everybody, without us, but me in particular, but without us. I mean, it was at least nice of him to say us, don't you think?
He always has that aside.
Referring to the people around him, including Mike Pence, who we learned during News or Ruse, actually narked on his own fraternity brothers for having a keg.
I know, I couldn't believe that. News or Ruse, we learned that today.
I hope you understand that some of my fraternity brothers actually have a keg in their bedroom, and that is against the Hellenic Association's policies.
They had a dry house, or maybe even a dry fraternity, or maybe a dry campus, I'm not sure, but they was totally against the rules.
The frats are the one that are Pence. Supposed to have the keg.
I know. He would not have been a good Delta, I could tell
no.
you.
No, well, the dean came to visit, and he's like, it's over there.
It's these two right here. They have the beer.
What a guy.
Get him out of here.
That alone. And again, as Violetta pointed out earlier, we needed that information before the election, people.
How come no one vetted that?
Yeah, that would have. Now, that could have turned the tide. Where was Hillary? Where were the Russians when we needed them?
I mean, that really speaks to someone's character.
Right. All right. Now, the president did talk about playing golf, because golf is not technically on the schedule, but the president kind of busted through that.
We're going to sneak out tomorrow morning and play a round of golf if possible. And if we have the time, when I was in Japan, the prime minister took me out to, and we played with a great golfer, Matsuyama. Yes. Right? Matsuyama. Mm. He's one of the top three or four golfers in the world. And I always thought I was okay at golf, but then I realized we're not so good. So he was really great and very special. And I also, just in ending, I want to congratulate you. It wasn't Matsuyama, but another great golfer from Japan won the big PGA event this weekend. And it's been a long time. So I just want to congratulate you on that. That's a big honor. It's a great honor. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh. That is like the classic guy line. We're going to sneak out for a round in the morning. We'll
right, like you're telling your wife that.
We'll see you in 6 hours.
Yeah,
we're going to sneak out, though. We'll be right back.
No, we'll be right back. No. You know, it's really fast, so we're not going to stop for a drink
quick
afterwards.
Round.
Don't worry about
it. We're getting out early. We're going to fly through the round.
Yeah, we'll be back. Don't worry
What's
about it.
What's the minimum amount of time a round of golf can take? What would you guys say?
3.5-ish.
3.5 hours.
I mean, if there's nobody on the course, I mean, your crew, but 4 hours is the average.
And let me just stand up for all the guys, since we're heading into golf season now. It's about 8 hours.
It's
the whole day thing. You get lunch, and you get
I can't
the
pick
after.
Up the kids. I can't watch anyone.
But we'll try to get it in fast. We'll try to get everything done. Don't worry about it. We'll be fine.
Sneak out. We'll sneak out.
That's the damnedest thing, though, about this, although when you play with your wife, it's about a 30-minute round. You ever notice that?
Just pick it up. Let's go to the next hole.
All right, we're done.
Yeah.
Just throw the ball into the hole.
We only need, and there's always cocktails. So no, we'll get through. We'll get through holes.
Yeah, I'm kind of done after 9 holes anyway.
Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Good. Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Are you tired?
To the clubhouse.
I have a friend who calls that the. Oh my God! I got to play a hit and giggle.
What?
A hit and giggle. Where it's like,
I don't like the way that sounds.
Like your wife hits the ball and then she giggles about it. Oh.
She's having fun. Isn't that what golf is supposed to be?
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. That's. I'm just saying. I don't call it that. My friend calls it that.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to swear and throw the golf club. And
yeah.
Kick the ball.
Nine holes of hit and giggle. All right, here we go.
Number 4.
Riders on the storm.
Oh, here she is. Stormy Daniels is on The View today. And really, what is the most horrifying now turn of the Stormy Daniels part of this affair? Thank you, Stormy, for at least bringing Michael Cohen to everybody's attention. And undoubtedly, he was already under investigation by the federal government. But thank you. Your work here is done. Goodbye. Is what I would like to say to her. But she won't leave.
Michael Avenatti also there.
No.
On The View.
And they unveiled a composite sketch of the guy she says threatened her in that parking lot in Las Vegas back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this looks like Brad Pitt.
It really does.
Let him date my daughter.
the, the sketch looks like a guy who'd be like an actor, like one of our co-stars in a porn film.
Yeah, he's dreamy.
Yeah.
And he looks pleasant in the drawing, too. Like, he's got a little smirk. But not a creepy smirk.
They say he looks like Tom Brady. But Tom Brady is not 5'9", just so everybody knows.
Yeah, but she's 5'9" to 6 feet tall. But you're like, this is not a real sketch of a real bad guy, is it? Is it? I mean, the guy's got like perfectly coiffed hair. He's got like hair product in mm-hmm. and the whole thing. I mean, and she remembers that from 2011?
No, I think that speaks to the sketch artist. She's really good at being able to capture it. I mean, if you look at her past, she's solved 1,000 crimes, they say, because of the likeness of her sketches that match the actual suspect. And they show them side by side often, and it is unbelievable.
All right. Well, good luck on that. By the way, there's no crime chargeable now because the statute of limitations on anything that he could have done right there, menacing, threat, whatever.
So Tom Brady's off the hook.
Yeah. Is not, they've gone past 5 years in Nevada for that. It's a state case. Anyway, here's Michael Avenatti explaining the sketch artist.
Lois Gibson has worked with cases that have been much longer than 7 years of age and has been very successful in getting identifications and having things like that hold up in a court of law. So we're confident that this is going to be another instance. And, yeah. and we're hopeful that we know that someone knows something. This yeah. man bragged to someone or told somebody about it, and we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, and Stormy, why didn't you go to the police?
I would have gone to the police and would have gone, okay, a man approached me. This is what he said to me. He told me to leave Mr. Trump alone. And their very next question, the detective would have asked me, why would somebody tell you to leave Mr. Trump alone? Mm. And I would have had to answer that question, which was not public at the time. And I would have had to tell an entire police department, and police reports are public record. I know that for a fact. I had sex with Donald Trump. And then the whole world would have known. And I was in the process of trying to quiet that or figure out what to do, and honestly I was just afraid, and I didn't want everyone to know. I didn't want my family to find out that way.
Listen, we all have that guy you don't want to say. Yeah, I don't want that coming out.
The whole world would have known. Doesn't the whole world know now?
Yeah, but in 2011 he was Citizen Trump. And she would, you know, she already knew that she was dealing with his people back then and didn't want to, you know. I mean, I no one doubts any of this. I don't know. I'm a little skeptical that the guy came up to her in a parking lot and did that, but okay. Especially a guy as good looking as this man in this sketch. But okay. Even if I accept that, I don't think that anybody cares about this, except maybe Melania. But even that I'm wondering about. Even that I'm like, he's Donald. And don't touch him. He does not touch me. Don't touch me. And get the rabbit out of the way, because the rabbit is scaring me, too.
Yeah, the kids care, or are they just like, it's dad for you?
I mean, for them, it's probably pretty. Yeah, I think they're used to it. Yeah. You know, at one point, I mean, you know, the kids have been complicit in some of, you know, running interference for him. He had the kids sat at a table with one of his girlfriends at an event.
Well, there was an introduction and everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so I think they don't care. I think they don't care.
Pops being pops.
Yeah, I'll tell you, right now, though, if I'm Barron, right, he's watching all this, too.
Yeah.
That's got to be tough.
You feel for him.
Yeah.
That's for sure. He's at that age where he's trying to
figure it out. I don't get the sense he's real close to dad anyway. You know, you get that you get that sense?
It's his dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's probably more harmed by it than his mom.
Right. That's possibly true. But either way, although we do know now from James Comey, if we believe him, mm-hmm. he's coming up at 5:40 today on this very radio program to tell you, and you can decide for yourself whether you believe him. But you know, he said that that Melania was upset about the whole dossier and the hooker story in Moscow or St. Petersburg or wherever that took place. Don't say Petersburg. All right. Right now, Judy's got the WGN News headlines for the bottom of the hour. It's coming up.
About $100 a vote in the Illinois gubernatorial race. We'll explain coming up at 5:30.
That seems cheap right there. That's $105 if you count the $5 to get to the poll.
Yeah, it's a little bit more than 100. So yeah, I'll give you the fiver.
And then there's this fly to the front of the line at LitFest on June 9th and 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours before they're gone. PrintersRowLitFest.org/FestPass.
In our interview with James Comey coming your way after 5:40. James Comey.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be the director of the FBI. We haven't heard much from him since.
Where's he been lately?
Well, he'll be here after 5:40.
Number three.
During his monologue last night, Stephen Colbert, he had these thoughts on the revelation that Sean Hannity is Michael Cohen's client.
How did Fox News let him go on the air with this massive conflict of interest? Did he not tell them? Or did he tell them and they just ignored it? I'm going to go with the first one because I know Sean Hannity. And delivering factual information is not his strong suit.
What about the FBI? No, they seized actual tapes of Michael Cohen talking to people.
It's not just files. The FBI seized audio recordings from Cohen's office during their raid. What's on those tapes is anyone's guess. Can I guess? I'm going to say a panicked call by Donald Trump from Moscow asking if baking soda and seltzer water will get stains out of a Sealy posture beating.
I don't want to think about that.
That for sure I know didn't happen because he wouldn't be cleaning it up.
No.
Number three.
You know, Caddyshack is one of America's most legendary comedies, but now the Murray brothers have opened up a Caddyshack restaurant in Rosemont.
How about that?
It's golf themed. And it's the second Caddyshack restaurant. They opened one in St. Augustine, Florida, about 17 years ago. And here is Bill Murray talking to about it with Dean Richards.
It's the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. It's a big day for my family. It's my little brother Joel's birthday today, so we're all getting to eat for free, and he's probably going to get a cake in just a couple.
That's really what this is about, isn't it? Free food for Bill Murray, right?
I'm doomed. You know, we fought for every scrap we could get at the dinner table when we were kids. So this is nice to have, good sized servings.
How cool is that? Wow. It opens today in Rosemont.
All right, and finally,
number one.
I can't believe this is true, but Steve Harvey is doing a Celebrity Family Feud.
Oh.
You know how they do that on Saturday Night Live?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where the parody becomes reality.
Oh, gosh.
Wait. So Steve Harvey is going to do a Celebrity Family Feud featuring Kanye West's family facing off against the Kardashian-Jenner clan.
I thought he's married to a Kardashian. Wouldn't that be part of his family?
Well, it'd be sort of like, I guess, an in-law
Kim's
sort of
on
family
him.
Feud.
Oh, okay. All right.
That is ratings gold. Here's what Steve Harvey told Ellen DeGeneres.
Kanye was the best Family Feud celebrity panelist we've ever had
really?
On the show. He loves the show.
Yes.
His people said, Steve, this is the most Kanye has ever smiled since we've been working. Kanye smiled. When I introduced him, he smiled. When I talk to him at the just tune in and you'll see Kanye smiling.
Yeah.
He's happy. He was very happy with that.
He does not smile a lot.
No.
Yeah.
It was originally supposed to be Kardashians versus the Hiltons.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
looking
Kanye.
Forward to it.
Yeah.
I like Fast Money. Oh, I want to get on that show.
And here's... but you know what? The one thing Steve Harvey thinks... is that he wishes that Kim were just a little bit better as a player.
Kim didn't know nothing.
No, really? No? And they still said, good answer, good answer?
Yeah, well, their family's a little bit different.
When
you don't give a good answer, they go, what did you say?
Uh-huh.
So it was like you were going, okay, you're supposed to say good answer. No, them Kardashians, all I want them to do is get all the Instagram followers to follow me.
All right,
that's
well.
That's all I want out the deal, and I have 400 million followers, and then I'm going to monetize it and quit all these jobs.
He's got a lot of jobs. A lot of followers that Steve Harvey's going to need before he quits.
All right, let's close this thing up.
The top five at five.
All right, here's the moment we've all been waiting for. A couple of hours ago, we sat down with James Comey. His new book has come out today, and here's what he told us. Joining us right now, former FBI Director James Comey. He's the author of A Higher Loyalty, which is just hitting the bookshelves. Director, were you as prepared for the kind of blowback that you're getting, not just from the Trump people, but from the Clinton people?
Yes, I dreaded it, but I had a pretty clear picture of what was going to come.
You entered into the political realm when you made this decision because you were concerned about how the FBI would be seen publicly as a result of this, and you've got a lot of people who are now criticizing you for that. If you were to do it all over again, would you do it the same way? And what is your reaction now that you've written the book and you've had months to think about it?
I would do it the same way, and I'm a little concerned that people are forming strong opinions without reading the book, because what I'm trying to do in the book is be introspective, cross-examine myself. I did not consider polls or political standing or how it would affect a candidate at all. In fact, consciously pushed those things away. I did consider and care deeply as the leader of an organization that depends upon the public trust. I considered the public trust. The public confidence in the work of the FBI is its bedrock. But what I've asked myself in the book is it possible that given that the whole world assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to be elected president, is it possible that even unconsciously that was in my head, and what impact would it have? And the answer is, of course it's possible, because I was living in that environment. Now, to cut to the bottom line, it wouldn't have changed the result, but in a way, maybe the implicit assumption she was going to be elected made the decision easier, because I had to choose between a really bad result and a catastrophic result. And the catastrophic result would be, in some ways, the worst possible outcome would be if she were elected president and we hid from the American people that we had restarted the investigation. I think even if Donald Trump had been up 30 points in the polls, your choices are still, do I speak or do I conceal? And you still have to choose speaking, because concealing is such a terrible, terrible outcome. That's all I was trying to do in the book. And I think if people read it, I'm not trying to talk them into agreeing with me, even the passionate people who work closely with Secretary Clinton. But I think if they read the book in an open-minded way, they'll say, oh, okay, I see. He actually wasn't on anybody's team. He wasn't trying to throw this to Trump or this to Clinton. He was trying to make a decision in light of the values of his institution.
But ultimately, isn't that what has already happened, though? Because now Donald Trump is seen in some ways as illegitimate because of the investigation that was going on that had not been previously disclosed.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair. Well, certainly not something the FBI can do anything about, because it was not a close call. In fact, it was never any serious discussion about revealing a very, very early counterintelligence investigation of four Americans who were not Donald Trump, trying to figure out, do they have any connection to the Russians? I mean, we would never announce such an investigation. Very different from the Hillary Clinton investigation, which began publicly, where the secretary was the subject of the investigation. And so that was actually never a serious discussion. What was a serious discussion is, so what should President Obama say about the Russian effort to influence the election? That's separate from the FBI's very early stage counterintelligence work. And that was a really hard question for President Obama, which I get. I offered to be part of telling the American people about that, and they didn't take me up on that offer in August. But I understand why that was such a hard call for the president.
One of the criticisms that obviously is being leveled at you from the right is that of your family, because your wife in the ABC News piece, she went on camera with George Stephanopoulos talking about her support for Hillary Clinton. Your wife and kids had marched in the rally afterwards. How are they doing in all of this, and what is your reaction to the kind of blowback that your family is encountering?
They're doing fine, and anybody, I guess there may be lots of people on the right who aren't married and so don't realize that you and your spouse can have different jobs, different perspectives, different responsibilities, and still discharge them well. The fact that my wife wanted Hillary Clinton to be elected president had no effect on me whatsoever. They're doing fine. My wife and kids also expected that the amount of blowback that was going to come. They all, along with me, dreaded it, but thought, as I did, I got to do this, and to not do it would be cowardly. To walk away and just go get a job making a lot of money someplace would be a surrender of something, giving up on something I ought to be doing to try and contribute to public dialogue.
Do you think America was ready for the impact that social media and digital deep diving and all the kinds of things that we're now seeing here. We were as ready to defend ourselves against foreign operators as the Russians were or that other people are. And what does this say about truth going forward in America?
Our culture was not ready. In some ways, our culture, it's a bit of an interesting logic problem. The culture is a product of social media and has been shaped by social media. One of the most dangerous forces in nature is the confirmation bias. That's my brain's craving for information consistent with what I already believe, and my brain's tendency not even to see information that disagrees with me. Well, what the internet allows us to do is reinforce that confirmation bias by putting myself in a bubble where I never hear anything other than what gives me pleasure because it agrees with me. I mean, take my situation. There's a whole lot of people in the Trump bubble who think I'm on Clinton's side. There's a whole lot of people in the Clinton bubble who think that I'm on Trump's side. Both cannot possibly be true, but because they're in bubbles, they never see each other. And so that balkanization that our social media environment permits is really, really concerning.
Will America ever go back to a place where politics are not a blood sport?
Yes. And we've seen these points of tremendous polarization before throughout our national history, and then oftentimes, unfortunately, there's been some cataclysmic event that resets the politics. I hope we don't need that. In fact, I don't believe we need that, but it resets eventually. People forget what the John Adams campaign against Thomas Jefferson was like, or the things they said about Ulysses Grant. Vicious, vicious stuff that we wouldn't say today. And so we've been here before. The question is, so how do we get back? How do we reset? And I hope to just be one teeny little part of helping us try to reframe and focus on the values of this country and rise above the vicious fights about policy.
Yeah. One last very quick question. Were you as surprised as the rest of the country was that Sean Hannity was actually one of Michael Cohen's clients?
I've been so busy in New York. I've seen it on the news. I don't know enough to react to that. I really don't.
All right. James Comey, thank you so much. Good luck with the book, A Higher Loyalty. Thank you for your service to America, sir.
Oh, it's great to hear WGN. Remember it well.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
How cool is that? Remembers the WGN well.
Yes. You know, it was an interesting thing because he does seem today to be, there's a bit of a change here in his answer, as you just heard about how he considers the Hillary versus Trump moment, because I think a true criticism is that, you know, he was worried that if Hillary were to win, it would be seen as an illegitimate presidency. But now, because of all the stuff that has happened in the aftermath, Trump is seen as an illegitimate president. It would have come out one way or the other. It would have come out one way, and this did come out one way or the other. So it's sort of the six of one, half dozen of the other. You know, and that's where we sit.
It is.
So, all right. Well,
great job.
Good. There he is. Awesome. Thank you. And that's available for podcast, for all of your podcasting needs. And he didn't. And I, by the way, our satellite window was closing there, so I did not have an opportunity to follow up with him beyond, because literally I was 10 seconds to the satellite window closed at the end. But it was the he's not seen the Sean Hannity thing. I think he probably has.
He's heard of it for sure.
But he doesn't. But Hannity beats him like a drum every night anyway. But now that we found out that Hannity and you know, Michael Cohen are working on real estate deals together, maybe they can open up a Hannity hotel chain in Moscow. Maybe they will do that. All right. Judy Pilak, what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom? It's a Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, we'll talk to Stone Pony about that Southwest Airlines flight. That's Alex Stone from ABC News.
How sad that is.
I'm like Donald Trump. Everybody gets a nickname. It's a very sad story, but it is also it's a story of a pretty great miss of a greater tragedy, I suppose. That's the way to put that. I didn't put it well. But the point is, that could have been a lot worse than it was. And it's horrifying what happened to that one passenger who was partially sucked out of the plane earlier today.
Fellow passengers helped pull her back into the plane.
but she still died.
Yeah, that's an awful story. But what happened there? What's the NTSB going to look at? I know there was a ground stop earlier in the day, and now the question is, does that particular aircraft, that's a 737-700 with CFM engines, which is the old General Electric, along with a French company, they make the CFM turbofans, and that's a that they are they going to start looking at that? Are they going to ground those planes? That's a big, and that's one of the most used aircraft in the world. Hmm. Is that 737 series, and the 700s and 800s are the ones that you see a lot of now, still in service. So
when you look at the plane and the damage to the one side, the engine that blew out, and they said there was a possible explosion to it, when you see that damage, it really is amazing that plane landed with the other passengers safely on the ground.
Right.
It just
amazing work by those pilots. That crew, the air crew, including the flight attendants, who were able to keep everybody calm and everybody as safe as possible. I mean, obviously, there was not much that could be done when a window gets pierced at altitude and that, you know, you get that that rapid decompression and and then everything starts to move toward that hole in the plane, including the woman sitting next to it. And it's incredible force. And Stone Pony will be joining us with that. And then turns out, in a total shift of gears here, Stormy Daniels has just made another announcement. First of all, she came out with the picture of the supermodel that she says that,
sketch.
That came after her in the parking lot in Las Vegas.
Unveiled that on The View today with her attorney.
She's announced her new project.
A new film? Finally.
Well, it's not a film, but I've decided what her new film should be titled and what it should be about. So we will we'll discuss that.
I'm sure you've given it a lot of thought.
I did. I woke up in the middle of the night with it, and I'm like, why didn't I think of this before?
Genius.
I don't know why I was dreaming about Stormy Daniels, but I woke up. Geez. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night. You know,
Jerry Maguire moment. You start just cranking out a whole script for a new film or something.
Right, and you're sure. I was like I was diagonal on the bed and a little sweaty and kind of it was kind of a weird, you know, you sort of like pop up in the middle of the night. What's going on? What day is it? What time is it? And then all of a sudden, it was like I had this dream about a Stormy Daniels film.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and it had this title in it, and I thought, well, am I dreaming this or did this really happen? And then I, you know, once you get awake enough to realize that it was a dream, I'm like, I could make a million off of this.
And then you're like, go back to sleep, keep dreaming about that.
no, even that, I could think of a lot of better dreams to have than Stormy Daniels. There's just something about her that is just, you know. That's one of the things about Donald Trump. You know, there was some low hanging fruit in this.
There really is.
The one that Karen McDougal,
victimless crime, right?
I gotta tell, yeah, I think it is. And you know, like the Karen McDougal thing, I think a lot of people, a lot of guys, I hate to say this, but guys can be guys about this. They're like, oh, he got her, and she like fell in love with him.
She said nothing but good things about him.
Except the fact that she's out there talking about them having sex.
Which, that part's not good for
him. Right. I never fully understood that part. She seems a little wacky. Well, I'm a Republican. He's my president. Well, then why are you out there doing this? No one compelled you to do this. Well, I just thought maybe it would be a good idea. Not the brightest bulb in the box, but she's a looker.
Now, Miss.
This is a very sad day. And on behalf of the entire Southwest family, I want to extend my deepest sympathies for the family and the loved ones of the deceased customer. I am immensely grateful that there are no other reports of serious injuries, but this is a tragic loss.
It's Gary Kelly, the CEO of Southwest Airlines, which has had an amazing safety record. Their only other fatality as a result of the airline, you know, obviously there have been passengers who passed away on flights, as you know, happens on every airline, has happened to every
from
airline.
Natural causes.
Right. But the only other fatality in the history of that airline was here at Midway during a snowstorm when the plane slid off the end of the runway and hit a passenger vehicle that was parked at a red light and stopped at a red light and killed a child in the back seat. And that that was a great tragedy. But the most amazing, I think they've had, and Alex Stone is joining us from ABC News, the Stone Pony. And I think they had, if I'm not mistaken, at Burbank, they had a similar incident, but nobody was hurt in that, where they went through the fence at that airport and ended up at a gas station. That was one of my favorite, because no one was hurt in that thing. That was one of my favorite pictures, because it looked like it was pulling into the filling station to get gas. But this is not a common occurrence for Southwest. And tell us what we know at this point, Alex.
Yeah, and on that Burbank situation, if they had gone about another 5 feet, they would have hit the gas tanks. That was years ago. And that gas station is no longer there because of that. There are no longer gas stations around that airport. What we know about this was a flight 1380, LaGuardia to Dallas. They diverted to Philadelphia in flight. They were at just over 32,000 feet. They had just been climbing from LaGuardia out of New York for their flight. They were fully pressurized. Everything was going normally. And then a big explosion, a big boom. There were holes ripped into the fuselage. One of them was a chunk of the engine, the left engine, going through a window of a passenger right above the wing. And that window shattered, came in on the passenger. That piece of debris came in on the passenger as well. She was in critical condition. Those who were on board say that she was partially sucked out of the plane with the pressure difference from the pressurized plane to the atmosphere outside, that you can imagine with the size of a airplane window that maybe her head was going out. But passengers say they were trying to pull her back in, that she may have been seatbelted in, so she also couldn't have gone through, but maybe the body wasn't going to fit through. She ended up dying once they got on the ground. But passengers say that they thought they were going down. The pilots had to do heroic work. They had three major issues on their hands. They had an engine failure, so they lost 50% of their power. They had to keep the plane in the air and deal with that. They had fuselage damage, so they had holes in their plane. They had to be careful what they did with it so it didn't rip bigger holes in the plane or rip the plane apart. They had a weakened aircraft skin. Then they had the rapid depressurization. They had to get that plane down to 10,000 feet within a matter of minutes before people would start passing out, even with the oxygen masks on, and wouldn't be able to maybe even survive in some cases. So they ended up going into a very quick descent. The people on board thought they were going down at that point. They were going descending so quickly. They went from 32,000 feet, just above 32,000, down to 10,000 feet in a matter of minutes. That's a very quick descent. But the pilots, by passengers, by Southwest Airlines, they're being called heroes right now. They dealt with all of that. It's what they train on. But they had all of these situations being thrown at them of an engine failure, fuselage damage, rapid decompression, and they got the plane down and they were able to land it in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And one of those pilots is Tammy Joe Schultz, a former Navy fighter pilot, a female pilot there, who apparently was extremely calm. They are hailing her as a hero this evening, saying that she told air traffic control shortly, seconds after it happened, "So we have a part of the aircraft missing," and calmly walked them through everything she was dealing with. You can only imagine what that must be like to get that safely on the ground. I mean, tragic that what happened to that one passenger, but my gosh, this could have been so much worse.
Well, yeah, and they, again, this is something that they train on, but all of these were being thrown at them at the same time, and
right.
That they had been in, you know, they had had a completely normal flight up until that point, and then, boom, the explosion happened, and then they very quickly had to make these decisions to get the plane down, and they did it. I think we've all been on planes that have had problems before, and you want information. You want to know what's going on, and passengers say that was the worst part, that they could feel themselves descending. They had a hole in the side of the plane. They had a passenger being sucked out. The pilots didn't have time to be briefing them on what was going on, so they thought at that moment that they were going down. Gary Kelly, the CEO of Southwest, a couple of moments ago held a briefing to say this is a sad day in many different ways for the airline. One, because they had a fatality on board, but two, that this does break that the record, that they had never lost a passenger in an accident before, and that was a record that was a big deal for the airline, because not a lot of airlines can say that, especially as old as Southwest Airlines is. But as you say, Anna, this could have been a whole lot worse.
My God, yeah.
We have a little bit of some of the air traffic control tape has been released here. Here's a little bit of it.
the number one engine failure. And it's a Boeing 737, 149 souls on board, and 21,000 pounds of fuel.
Yeah. You know, when they have to make that call about souls on board, and that's part of the pre-flight, they have to fill that out. They have to let everybody know before they take off. It's part of their clearance delivery where they get out. That's the rule. But when something bad happens, they have to declare that immediately, and that has just got to be chilling.
Terrifying as a passenger, for sure. I mean, you've seen some of the videos. One man was Facebooking live. He basically thought these were his last moments. Some of the passengers believed that this was the plane going down because of the rapid descent involved. But obviously, amazing
work. Well, yeah. Now, the NTSB, their go team, got there several hours ago. They're going to be looking at the engine. They say they don't know yet if it was uncontained engine failure, because an engine is supposed to contain. If it fails, and engines do fail, if it has a problem, it's supposed to keep it all within the parts of that engine. In this case, it seems like it definitely was, being the pieces were flying all over. They had pieces hit the wing. There were chunks out of the wing, chunks out of the fuselage. And then they had a fuel leak on top of that, the fuel in the wing of the 737. And so they had all these issues. But it seems like that it was definitely some kind of uncontained engine failure. The focus now for the NTSB and for the airline and the FAA is going to be on this engine, the CFM56. It is the standard engine for the 700 series of the 737. It's made by a joint venture between GE Aviation in the U.S. and a French company. And this is not the first time this has happened to Southwest. There was a case in 2016 of uncontained engine failure, 737-700 over the Gulf of Mexico. The engine exploded. It was a left engine, same one, not the exact same engine, but right, in the same place. Mm-hmm. The aircraft fuselage had damage. The cabin depressurized. Luckily, nobody was seriously injured there. But in that case, and the NTSB is still investigating that one, the fan blades showed signs of fatigue, according to early indications, the NTSB. Those blades made of titanium alloy, copper nickel alloy. Now they'll have to look at this and see, is this the same thing? Is it connected in any way? It may or may not be. Gary Kelly, again, the CEO of Southwest, a few moments ago said he's not worried at all about this engine, that they have been flying this engine for a long time, and this plane for a long time, the 700, and out of all the cycles that they do and all of the flights that they fly, having two of them, he says he's not concerned that it's not safe. But it is something that all parties involved are going to be looking at. Is there something about an older plane using this engine that begins to show fatigue? This engine had gone through 40,000 cycles. That's 40,000 takeoffs and landings. Mm-hmm. It had had some life on it. And is this something that they're now going to have to pay attention to?
The airframe itself, do we know if that engine was original to the airframe?
We don't know, and Gary Kelly didn't know either. The plane is 17 years old, coming up on 18 years old. It was delivered in 2000.
Oh, then that can't be the same one, because it's going to do more than 40,000 cycles, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, just based on math, it would be. And it would make sense that it wouldn't be based on they cycle them out, do service on them, and put another one on there. But nonetheless, the plane is, you know, a lot of focus has been on the aircraft itself. The aircraft didn't fail here. The engine failed, but the aircraft did its job. It got everybody on the ground. So the real focus being now on that, on the engine itself and what went on there.
It just tells you how immensely safe. I know this is a tragedy today, and this is could have been a far worse tragedy, and I think you articulate as well as it can be, Alex, about the great dedication, heroism, professionalism that was shown by the flight crew to get that plane on the ground as quickly as it did. But there's so much technology on board these aircraft, and they are designed in such a sturdy way that an incident like this that, you know, two generations ago, or even a generation ago, could have been far worse than it was. There was an MD-88, I believe it was, a Delta MD-88 back about 20 years ago, that during its takeoff roll, they had an engine that had exactly the same sort of thing. And that plane had the engine on the actual body, on the fuselage, not the wings, at the back, the two engines on the back. And a fan blade came slicing through and actually killed the two passengers sitting closest to it, and then there was a child in a child seat that was saved by the child seat in that, and that's the and that was considered to be one of the one of the more dangerous circumstances of that era, because aviation had gotten so safe that the kinds of things that were happening, unless there was human interference in some way, planes are basically have an incredibly great safety record. But that startled everybody when that happened then. And then you would think when the engines are on the wings, you wouldn't have a situation like this. But now, you know, this is just the happenstance that occurred.
So. Yeah, I mean, it happens. And think about, there has not been for a domestic airline in the U.S. a fatality since 2009 when the Colgan Air flight went down in Buffalo, New York, and fell out of the sky. Mm-hmm. There has not been involving a U.S. airline. Now, there was the Asiana crash in 2013 in San Francisco, the 777 that crashed, but that was a foreign airline. But among U.S. airlines, not a crash since 2009 that was fatal.
Right. I remember someone took credit for that. Here is the a little bit more of the air traffic control audio here.
Oh.
Is there any injuries inside the aircraft itself? But also, we have no signs of any smoke or fire from the outside right now.
Okay, we do have injured inside, so as soon as we can get those taken care of, that'd be great.
Okay, I think that's.
You think how calm she is. Just if you think about what Alex just told us about what was going on with that airplane.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
And military fighter pilots, panic is not part of their protocol.
Nothing phases them. Yeah. There isn't even a hint of any kind of tension in her voice.
It sounds like they were already on the ground because it sounded like traffic control was able to. The tower was able to see the plane. So, you know, you have that. And, of course, they're like, we got to, you know, address that first. And the plane wasn't on fire at that moment. It is, when you see the pictures of this, Alex, I know you got to run, but when you see the pictures of it, I mean, it is startling also the how well-constructed some of this is, because you see the amount of energy that you know, tore that engine apart, and yet most of it stayed together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, and that's one thing they had to worry about. That what if it did, as they were coming down, if they were to put too much force on the aircraft, and then once they were on the ground, that they were calm enough to say, no, we're not going to evacuate this plane from the slides. They knew at that time they could wait for stairs to come up. You can imagine if you're on that plane and you've had an oxygen mask on and you just took a dive from up there and one passenger was getting sucked out, you would want to pop those doors and get on those slides and get out.
Yeah.
But no, it was calm enough that they waited for stairs to come up, and then they went down from there. Also, just adds up, we just got told the NTSB is going to hold a briefing in about an hour and a half. That they're going to give some more details now that they're on the ground.
Right, because their go team has actually gotten to Philadelphia now, we're told.
So. Yep, they're on the ground now.
All right, Alex, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Alex Stone, ABC News. Right now, Judy Pilak, WGN News, tells us what's happening in the newsroom.
Well, a little breathing room from the IRS. We'll explain at 6:30.
Really?
That never happens.
Really? I mean, I'm supposed to feel better about this?
We get a treat from the IRS.
I'd like to share what my return looked like for this year.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm getting a refund.
Yeah, okay. I didn't.
Ouch.
Hey, your traffic, Violetta?
Yes.
Violetta, refund upon her medic?
I got bills to pay.
$15 ain't going to go that far. Brought to you at Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
And then there's this Wednesday, Tom Skilling takes you aboard Coast Guard cutter Mackinac, the heaviest American icebreaker on the Great Lakes. Wednesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9. Tom is back.
I just saw a promotional announcement for that on Channel 9, that looks really cool.
Love his special reports. Ugh.
He's like holding on, he's going up the little stairs, you know, on the boat, mm-hmm. you know, to get up to the, I don't know, the control deck or whatever they call that. I'm not much of a mariner. I know you find that hard to believe. I'm more of the flying type than I am the seafaring. But he's like holding on to it, and it's kind of what are you doing out there? He told us about this a couple weeks ago.
He did.
He's been on vacation. He returns to the program on Thursday, and we'll talk about this special because it's gonna be really super cool. And it was 8 degrees. He shot this a couple of weeks ago, and it was 8 degrees air temperature up near Mackinac.
Tom Skilling, a hardy guy.
Yeah, that's not that's working way too hard. Hey, I want to, speaking of working hard, because this is a woman who did work hard for her money.
Mm-hmm.
Stormy Daniels.
Oh, boy.
Stormy is, now I find this, you're going to find this very interesting. Stormy is has a new project that she has just announced in the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
We will tell you what it is, and I have decided that I have a project I'd like her to do. First, I'd like her to get out of the news. That would be a good thing. But I have a I've come up with what the title of her new film and what it should be about.
Okay, pitch it. Yep. Michael Avenatti.
I'm going to give you an elevator pitch coming up, or a Hollywood pitch.
Oh, gosh.
Coming up in just a few minutes after Judy Pilak's WGN News Right Now, being brought to you by American Weathermakers. Oh, God.
Does she ever?
Oh, God. All right, Stormy Daniels, who is fresh off The View today, where they released the composite sketch of her assailant in 2011, her alleged assailant, and he looks like Tom Brady from 2011. It looks actually like her ex-husband, right?
Yeah, Tom Brady's been ruled out, so before we try to drag him into this...
Although Tom Brady would be, he's been a defender. He would be like the perfect guy. Perfect suspect in this.
The side-by-side pictures, though, they're pretty funny. And then the ones of her ex-husband and the sketch, also pretty uncanny in the resemblances to, it's a very graphic sketch. I mean, if you look at it, there's so much detail in it. It's amazing.
That's a face you don't really forget because it's pretty memorable.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, someone who threatens you.
You
and
remember
your kid.
Those dreamy eyes. Oh, well, right, if something scary happened, but.
Yeah, but.
I'm saying when a good-looking guy walks by, you kind of notice his hair, his eyes, his lips, whatever.
Okay. So anyway, the point
he's
here
threatening
is
threatening her though.
She doesn't seem to get that part. It's okay. It's okay. She sometimes is a little slow on the uptake in situations like that. It's like, oh, I get it.
Well, maybe
you're trying to steal my wallet. Oh, I'm sorry. Here you go. All right. Anyway, here's the point.
Okay.
Here's the point that Stormy is now announced that she is going to be the Penthouse Pet of the Century.
Oh.
Coming out on May 8th, the new Penthouse magazine. I have no idea that they still publish Penthouse.
Yep, there's a cover that's everywhere right now. They're showing she's draped in the American flag, partially draped, I guess we could say, in the American flag.
Getting intimate with the most wanted woman in America. I don't know about that.
Who's that? Oh, Stormy Daniels? Is that what I'm talking about?
Now, sources close to Penthouse have informed the Daily Beast. That's who I'm reading from here. The okay. Daniels talks about everything in her affair.
Hasn't she already talked about everything?
Nope.
You're talking about this is intimate details.
Right. Right. She talks about Michael Cohen, too.
Another client
It's a full circle because the magazine and everything, now she's on it.
Okay. All right. You know what? We got to step down here for just a second because ABC News now has this special report that is coming up. Rob Martier is standing by in the newsroom. Special report coming at the top of the minute here. Is that what's going to happen? Let's go now live to ABC News in New York. Or shall we?
Have to stand by for that.
I need a little bit of an update here, people. Can somebody update me on where we are?
Graves' disease for decades and had recently been treated and hospitalized for respiratory issues. Former First Lady Barbara Bush has died, surrounded by family at her home in Houston. I'm Dave Packer. This has been a special report from ABC News.
All right, there you have it.
Barbara Bush.
Barbara Bush has passed away. Obviously, you know, going into the weekend there, we kind of had that idea
that she was gravely ill, was
going to occur.
It's very sad. You saw her grandchildren crying as they talked about her, and wow, very sad.
There is when you think about the Bush legacy here in American life, American public life, right? You go back to George H.W. Bush's father was in Congress. And then George H.W. Bush, you know, that's, of course, you know, director of the CIA, vice president of the United States, president of the United States, and then George W. Bush. And Barbara Bush has the unique distinction of being, I think, one of only two people ever to have been the wife and father and mother of a president.
Hmm. Yeah. It makes sense. And they're focusing on, you know, she's been suffering from a terminal illness for some time and had made her wishes known about how she wanted her end of life to be carried out, what kinds of medical treatment she wanted and what she didn't want. Comfort care is apparently what the focus was. And then at some point, it, you know, obviously the decline took her life. And
sad, age of 92.
You think about long life and a lot of accomplishments.
Yeah, an incredible life. And George H.W. Bush, obviously, his failing health had been very, very widely reported on. And he's been in and out of the hospital. But, you know, George H.W. Bush is a guy who, you know, he was jumping out of an airplane, right, for his 80th birthday. And I think he replicated his 90th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wanted to, you know, show the world that he was a vital guy, always on the run, always on the go. And this is, you know, it's obviously one of those moments. George H.W. Bush was not the feared one in the family, I'm told. That Barbara was the serious one. Barbara was the tough one.
I could see that. Someone who's very strongly morally rooted, but also would be somebody who would call out her family members and keep everyone in line. Like, you know, very strong woman.
And we don't have, obviously, this is just breaking now that even though this was, I believe, anticipated, the family had let us know over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I believe on Sunday they were reporting that she was asking for end of care life.
Yeah.
At that point, as opposed to, or end of life care.
End of life care.
End of life care, as opposed to any kind of, you know, further medical intervention in her condition.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, you know, George H.W. Bush, who is the, you know, the scion of the congressman, and now, of course, the you know, the father of the president of the United States and the governor of Florida, right? I mean, this is just a family that has been involved in so many things.
Yeah,
you know, you hope that that the proper respect is paid for this family, however you feel politically about the Bush family and their legacy, or however you feel about Donald Trump, or however you feel about the Clintons, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that is for sure is that these people, you know, they took the slings and arrows. They stepped up to serve at a moment. And I think that, especially in spouse situations like this, they don't get enough credit for the sacrifice that they make. As well.
Too true. There was a statement from the family this just moments ago. A former First Lady of the United States of America, relentless proponent of family literacy. Barbara Bush passing away at the age of 92. And they talk about who she survived by, her very prominent family. 5 children and their spouses, 17 grandkids, and 7 great-grandchildren.
All right. Rob Martier is in the WGN newsroom. You can tell us what else is coming up at the top of the hour. Rokoncho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Quite an afternoon it has been here.
Really has.
We did a sit down with James Comey on the day that his book came out, and you can find that at WGNradio.com or go to the podcast section there. They've already placed that up there for your audio entertainment and information. Really more information than entertainment. I only got one little chuckle out of him. Every interviewee feel comfortable.
Have a little bit of a moment of levity,
yes.
Or two.
Yeah. But
hey, I'm in my boxers doing this interview.
Yeah, I think we both were. I think we were both in our boxers doing the interview. No, actually, he was at the ABC News studios in New York.
Oh, so he was in his boxers.
And hopefully he was wearing pants.
And I was in my my studio in my home. And which, by the way, I'd like the IRS to know that on tax day. That
he does, in fact, have a home office.
Yes.
It's rather large.
Yes, it's a large home office.
A lot of area. I couldn't even put a number on it.
Takes 90% of the house.
Percent of the house. Yeah,
90% of the house, right?
Right.
I live in 10% of the house. That's on tax day. Just want you to know that. And there is, So it was like a last minute thing because we were actually scheduled to interview him tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and then at the last minute they adjusted us back to today, and no one was completely prepared for it, including Mr. Comey. But I want to thank Steve Jones at ABC News for helping us get that done today,
sure,
because that was really quite a thing.
Also want to thank the IRS for issuing a tax filing deadline extension due to their website glitch today that did not allow people to make payments. So the IRS was being nice and saying, hey, you got until midnight tomorrow.
Right.
But you still have to have the money to pay them.
Yes. Well, you can pay them later, but you have to pay interest. Just a little something to think about. You're getting a refund, though.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I'm getting a refund.
Yeah, of course, right. But if you want to set up an immediate payment program with them, they will work that out for you at a price.
Just waiting to see the money come in my account.
You could also file, I got guys who file for an extension every year anyway. I know a guy. I honestly, and it's a guy who works in our business. I love him. I respect him. He's a smart guy. I would never have ever thought this of the guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he files an extension every year, and sometimes it goes like a year without filing the taxes.
Really?
This is my first year not filing an extension. So I'm pretty proud.
This is my first year filing an extension.
Well, you had a lot of travel this year. I'll step up for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this poor guy right here.
Yeah, poor Kevin.
I don't know how I made it through this past year.
Yeah, this was a 2017 was a tough year for poor Kevin.
Yeah. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
These teams aren't going to cover themselves.
Right. So that's always when people say, well, I filed an extension. Well, I had a lot of travel and a lot of expenses. I got to figure it out. I don't have time to do it.
Well, right. Who wants to sit down and do it? If you can put it off till later. Especially when it's difficult.
There was one of the astronauts in Apollo 13, of all the things that went wrong on that mission,
mm-hmm.
one of the guys had forgotten to file his taxes.
Oh, no.
Because they took off on April 13th, and uh-huh. he was not supposed to be on the flight. Right at the last minute, they put him on.
Oh, well, then that's a total excuse.
Because they thought he was, because they thought the other guy was going to get the measles.
Oh.
And so the actual... The third astronaut, and so they threw him in there. I think his name was Kevin Bacon. That's how I remember it.
Yeah. I can't go. I didn't file my taxes.
And then he's up there and he's like, "Well, I didn't get a chance to file my taxes." And they're like, "Yeah, okay.
Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You're probably not going to make it back anyway."
Oh God!
Too soon.
Well, they made it back though. We just had, people, please, a little sense of humor. We just had
mm-hmm.
Jim Lovell on this program last week.
That was spectacular.
We've had quite a year of celebrity guests here. All right, so I'm going to have to get to the rest of the, given the news that that just broke about Barbara Bush's mm-hmm. passing, I'm going to save my the rest of the Stormy Daniels story for you.
That seems appropriate.
Yes.
It does. It really does. I think
the fact that we have to save something like that is concerning within itself. But
right. But that's...
someone's got to do it.
Yes, out of respect. I think that's the appropriate thing
Let's
to do.
Shelve the Stormy bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I, quite honestly, I didn't want to run it past anybody first because they would have said no.
So you'll let us know tomorrow what your idea for a business idea for Stormy Daniels is.
Yeah, her new film title.
Her new film.
And then I've got the plot written out.
It came to you in the middle of the night.
It did, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm
sure you thought about it long and hard.
Well, I just can't imagine that nobody's thought of this yet because it's such an obvious one, but we'll get to it. All right.
Good.
Yeah. At another time. I have to be respectful of the mood of the nation right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let us... take a short time out, and then we'll find out what's coming up in the world of Justin Kaufman right after...